Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar. I'm Nancy Stone with RealCom, and we're pleased to be presenting part one of our three-part series on next-gen in-building wireless. We have a great panel who'll provide you with an overview of in-building wireless technologies and future-ready strategies for building owners and occupants. Before we get started, I'd like to review a few housekeeping items. First, use the Q&A box on the bottom right of your screen to submit your questions and comments. We'll try to get to them during the session, or we'll follow up with you after the session ends. For the best webinar experience, we suggest you close any other internet apps you're running. If you have any technical issues during the session, please contact me at nstone@realcom.com. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded, and a link to the recording will be sent to all registrants. We'd like to thank today's gold sponsors, Extenet, Spot On Networks, and Nextivity. You'll hear more about these companies during the session. Today's webinar will be moderated by Jay Floyd, Hospitality Industry Advisor with T-Mobile. Over the past 26 years, Jay has held senior leadership roles in key segments associated with in-building wireless with mobile network operators Sprint, Verizon, and currently T-Mobile. Previously, he held an executive IT leadership role with the Fortune 500 hotel and casino conglomerate, MGM Resorts. Jay, welcome, and thank you for moderating today.
Thank you, Nancy. That is quite the introduction. I appreciate that. It makes me sound very, very important. But this is a big industry, and we have a lot of industry experts. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. So
thank you.
Good day, everyone. My name is Jay Floyd. I am the moderator for today's In Building Wireless series webinar. This is part one, developing a comprehensive strategy. I get the honor and the fun part of this program to introduce several industry leaders who will present relative information pertaining to today's topic. Our webinar today is a natural starting point for the series as we look to explore business and technical influences of a strategy. In addition to these influences, we will identify key internal and external resources that are necessary to create a more comprehensive strategy. It's extremely important to perform due diligence prior to finalizing a comprehensive strategy. For in the end, and this is very important, the outcome will dictate a technology service that is without question one of the most significant property features offered to our customers, guests, visitors, tenants, and employees: wireless connectivity. As I stated earlier, my name is Jay Floyd. I lead T-Mobile's strategy for hospitality, sports, entertainment, and large venues. My role with T-Mobile aligns well with today's topic as I serve as the industry advisor to our strategic customers. One area of my collaboration with customers includes consulting on this very topic in building wireless strategies. Prior to my role with T-Mobile, I was a corporate IT executive for MGM Resorts, where I led a team of architects, engineers, and mobile support personnel for all end-to-end wireless infrastructure and services across MGM's property portfolio. During my tenure with MGM, I created an in-building strategy that will advance the company's aging infrastructure into the next generation of wireless technologies, services, and business solutions. In a moment, I'm going to share with you my comprehensive strategy starting point, because I know this is a very important piece of today's topic, a crucial first step in determining your future wireless needs. For those of you who are new to today's topic, you may be asking yourself, what is in-building wireless? Let me provide you a simple example. Consider the answer really your Wi-Fi in your house today. In-building infrastructure is really, you know, that of, you know, equipment, cabling, and this is known as infrastructure, to form a network that produces a wireless signal. Your laptop, the laptop I'm using today, a mobile phone can connect to this network using that wireless signal. The wireless network connection in your home provides you access from your device to the internet via a service provider. This is a simplistic example of what we call in the industry a use case, internet access. Now, in a commercial building, the wireless connection can provide you access to other types of network, not just internet access. The difference between your home and the commercial building is complexity and cost. Today, our group of amazing industry experts will share their intimate knowledge as they break down these complexities of in-building wireless. Our goal really is to help you identify key aspects to use as you begin to develop a comprehensive strategy. But before I introduce our panelists, as promised, I would like to share with you my perspective of where to begin. So, where is that? Let me make the recommendation to begin with a business perspective. Evaluate your day-to-day operations across all business units. Determine if a specific operations depend on technology to function. The evaluation will aid you, your organization, your IT specifically, and or your technology partner if you choose one. They're really going to help you identify the technology dependencies, and there's a lot of them in building wireless. Some of them maybe include mobile devices, tablets, cabling, network switches, and other wireless infrastructure necessary for the functionality of that specific business use case. In the slide here, you see T-Mobile has separated an example of business use cases into specific categories: enhanced mobile broadband, massive connectivity, and critical communications. These categories assist in determining which cases may share similar technical requirements for the type of wireless connection. For example, you see in the slide, critical communications. This is going to demand high availability in a wireless network connection. In most scenarios, different types of wireless networks are required within a venue based on the use cases they support. It's not uncommon. I've been to many, many large venues. It's not uncommon to walk into that venue and know that it has a Wi-Fi network, a distributed antenna system to enhance cellular signals, and many other wireless networks that use different technologies to connect devices, people, and things. You're also going to hear a lot of buzz around 5G and private LTE networks and the business use cases they support as well. Another factor to consider during your evaluation involves determining who will be using the wireless service within the venue. Let me give you a couple examples. So enterprise wireless services are those services in which the public does not have access to. Typically, this wireless service is reserved for employees or business use. Customer-facing services typically are related to open internet access, much like you would walk into a building and sign on to their Wi-Fi service. A service offering to the public is visiting that venue is very, very important aspect of your strategy as well. All of these, during your evaluation will have a major impact on your overall strategy. One other topic as well, and this is a very important one, cost factors. Both capital and operational expenditures will determine the type of in-building wireless model you identify in your comprehensive strategy. There are a number of business models out there supporting the deployment of in-building wireless networks. I highly recommend you research them all to determine the pros and cons of each. As you can probably picture, the complexity only increases from here. One final thought, every company is different and their needs are unique to their users and the venue. Your comprehensive strategy should reflect the uniqueness of your business and the experience you're trying to create. There is a starting point. That is your starting point. And let's start now to look at our panelists and what they add to that. So without further ado, I would like to introduce our first panelist, Brian Schwartz. Brian is the Vice President of IT for Premier Retail Centers. This is Mesa Rich. With over 50 properties nationwide, Brian oversees corporate initiatives pertaining to wireless networks, closed caption TVs, customer analytics, and digital marketing platforms. Brian, welcome and thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Thank you very much. So I'd like to talk a little bit about what we were doing in terms of getting a wireless strategy together. It dovetails a lot into what Jay just said, but for those of you who don't know who Macerich is, Jay went over it a little bit, but we own and operate several regional centers and shopping centers throughout the U.S. We have 47 regional with over 50 total, about 51 million square feet of GLA. So that being said, I can't tell you how much time we've spent talking about a digital or a wireless strategy. We went around and around and over again. Do we need Wi-Fi? Why do we need Wi-Fi? Is Wi-Fi important? Maybe now it is, but what about when 5G, 6G, 7G, 8G, 10G, whatever that the future holds? Are people even going to need Wi-Fi? Is cellular going to surpass it? So why do we need it? So what we did was we started asking ourselves about our properties, right? A little bit again dovetailing on what Jay said. What's the business reason? What are we trying to accomplish? What do we want there? what do we want to get out of the wireless infrastructure of the property? Do we need wireless for some sort of infrastructure backhaul, or is it just for the shoppers? Do we want it to be income generating? Do we want it to have analytics? So, and what kind of wireless is needed? Do we just need Wi-Fi? Do we need cellular? Do we need some kind of combination? So that's some of the kind of discussion that we went on, and by answering those questions, it helped us clarify what we wanted to get out of our business or our wireless infrastructure. Sorry, one too far. The second part of that is what are our customers doing? Our shoppers, they come to our centers, and these are the people that we really want to have the access. So we decided that wireless infrastructure and backhaul is probably not what we're going to be using it for. This is going to be an amenity for our shoppers. So we needed our shoppers to come to our centers, and we wanted them to feel connected. We wanted them to feel like, hey, they're in a good center. An up-and-coming center, a technology-aware center, but not to lose any connectivity because of that. So, for example, if we put in Wi-Fi but they didn't have a cellular signal, that was no good. We wanted them to stay. We wanted them to shop longer, right? We wanted to keep them in the center. So, what can we do? What kind of in-building wireless would we need to do that? So, by having Wi-Fi there, it gives a portion of our shoppers that really depend or want or need Wi-Fi to have that. But doing something like a DAS system enables them to make sure they have good cellular coverage in the building. That way they can get calls, right? If they can't get calls, they're not going to come back and they're not going to stay there. So, and then we looked at CBRS, or we're starting to look at CBRS, and that's another layer here. So we really opted to kind of layer everything, and I think you're going to hear that on and on. You need a layering of different in-building wireless options, because one size doesn't necessarily fit all. So just to talk about each of those a little bit, Wi-Fi, right? There's kind of an expectation that many venues provide Wi-Fi. So when you go somewhere and you don't see Wi-Fi, you think, well, why don't they have Wi-Fi? So we wanted that, we needed that to be there so that people who wanted to join the Wi-Fi felt like they could, and they could get good service on the Wi-Fi. They could feel connected on the Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi could be income generating, generally not for us. We didn't want it to be an income generating. We wanted it to be an amenity for the shoppers. And it was there as an opportunity to gather analytics. Although partnering with business, different parts of our business, we opted not to gather analytics at first. And you know, we're kind of dipping our toe in there. Should we ask for email addresses when they get on the Wi-Fi so we can build up our mail list? So all that together kind of gave us the idea. You know, Wi-Fi does give us a lot of this opportunity, a lot of these. A lot of things that our shoppers are going to want and need as they come in. The next piece that came in was we wanted that cellular availability as well. So we looked at DAS systems, and this we partnered with American Tower, and we looked more for income generating opportunities here. So we invested in neutral host systems that allowed multiple providers to come in and provide better connectivity throughout our centers, especially in the ones that had bigger dead zones, right, that weren't as available. Those would all get these in-building DAS systems that would give them that connectivity that they needed. So now we had those two. And that's kind of where we stopped or where we are now. The next step really came to CBRS. And where is that going to be in the future as we go on? And to be honest, over the past year, there's been a few other priorities that took us away from looking at CBRS. But as it's maturing, as it's coming into kind of the limelight now, having control of your network is something that we really want to do. Controlling our analytics, controlling the network, controlling the data, and even having that opportunity for income generating of this network to be pushed out to some of the providers. That's a big opportunity that we're looking into as well, and trying to figure out, is that the way, or is that where we want to go? So it's still a little newer, especially for us. I know it's been maturing They're talking about smart cities with CBRS now. So it's really kind of moving forward a lot, but it is something that is on our roadmap. We need to understand it. We need to figure out how we can get that into our centers so that we can, again, keep our centers current, keep our centers in building wireless the way we want it, the way we want our customers to experience it and have a really good user experience. Finally, just as we kind of see that light at the end of the tunnel, like what does it look like for our centers once we come out of COVID, once everything is opened back up? What is it post-pandemic life at the centers look like? I know a lot of places look at the pandemic having catapulted us in the future a little bit, right? I can tell you in our company, no one dreamed of being on video for a call. They didn't want to be on video. They didn't believe in video. It was just a pipe dream. And then, you know, cut to a few months after the pandemic started, everyone's on video. So there's a lot of these new technologies, or a lot of technologies that kind of pushed us further into the future than we would have had there not been one. But now that mall traffic is on its way back up, what does that mean for bandwidth? What does that mean for the new systems that may be required at the mall? Will we be required to have contract tracing systems, queuing systems for the centers or for the tenants in the centers? Real-time occupancy, do we need to keep track of that? So what we want to do is make sure that whatever infrastructure we put in will always be able to hit all those things. And if we have done a good job and we paid attention to what we wanted to accomplish, whatever system comes in can just attach onto our in-building wireless systems and be successful from there going out.
Brian, thank you. I mean, I'm going to, you know, go on out on a limb here and say that we shared a lot of similar challenges when I was with MGM Resorts. Obviously, you know, our guests that visit our venues is extremely important. I mean, at the top of the list for us, really, it's all about customer experience. And then obviously the employees to be able to leverage that technology. I'm curious with that, how has your company's in-building wireless strategy adjusted to meet user demands at your properties?
So how's it changed? Well, it's continually evolving, right? So what we want to do is look and see how people are using it and enhance it for that. So for example, we're upgrading a lot of our centers to Wi-Fi 6 over the next year, because as we see more and more people get newer and newer handsets, need more and more bandwidth, that comes in and changes the way we're using it and increases our need for bandwidth. So as of right now, we have a certain bandwidth, and we're probably not doing as good of a job with bandwidth as we need to, but you can't ignore the bandwidth question that comes in. What do we do with bandwidth? Because as you have DAS hitting your systems, you have CBRS coming in, you have Wi-Fi, you're going to see a big increase in all the systems that are having a requirement for bandwidth, and you need to be able to accommodate all those without having, you don't want your bandwidth to be eaten up and someone trying to make a call and not being able to make a call. So there's a lot of those considerations that are underlying that we're really trying to pay attention to, do more proactive engagement around to make sure that the engagement of our shoppers is a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So, and let me thank you for sharing your expertise and your intimate knowledge from an enterprise perspective. I know that's very, very important to our audience today. So thank you once again. Really appreciate you joining us today. And just a reminder that Brian will be coming back for the end of the presentation, where we'll be doing Q&A. So for those in our audience, you can submit your questions in the chat section of the webinar. So Brian, we'll see you a little bit later. Thank you so much. Our next panelist is Michael McMahon. He is an intelligence building consultant from the firm Newcomb & Boyd. Mike has spent over 18 years pioneering and managing complex IT solutions, and in addition to collaborating work with top Fortune 500 companies. Mike, it's a pleasure, and thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, really a big pleasure on my part for being here and being invited to participate in this. A lot of really good points have been brought up between you, Jay, and Brian's presentations here. And what I'd like to add upon this is developing your strategy, where to start, how do you begin, to keep things a little bit more aligned with what your focus is in a building. So one of the first things we're going to take a look at is your high-level strategy, right? Everybody's been in the first situation before. You start and stop. You kind of spin around. New information becomes available halfway through your planning phase. Funding disappears. You know, you end up with something like that. Obviously, what you want to try to get to is what's along the bottom, where you've got your start, very smooth finish. One of the things we're going to talk about today is how to accomplish this. And what are some of the means to do it? And really it comes down to a hand, an approach, and a mindset, and asking four simple questions. So the first thing is to raise your hand, right? As property owners, developers, your job is to develop your property, your job is to run your business. As Brian stated, they ask themselves a lot of questions. What all the different technologies and flavors of technology out there, what are going to be some of the benefits, what's going to be the cost, how do I bill back for this, how do I recur some of this, is some of the investment in this just non-tangible, am I just providing it as an amenity? A lot of partners out there are going to be able to drive you, and I'm going to kind of walk you through today what you should be looking for with a partner. So one of the first things is to take a programmatic approach rather than a project approach. And what I mean by that is a project is kind of more of a linear, single-focused endeavor. You've got a very start, you got a start and a very defined stop. Programs are more along the lines of a collection of projects, and they focus more on the outcomes. So you need to understand that, you know, in your business, you've got a lot of things going on. You've got maintenance, you've got upgrades, you've got roadmaps, you've got tenant improvement fit-ups. A lot of things are going on in your world, and being able to find somebody that can take all of those things into consideration when designing an in-building wireless solution for you is really going to be a key factor. One of the things you're also going to want to look at as you develop this is your first, second, and third order of possibilities. How can I leverage this? What's coming to fruition by installing this and making this investment? So the first question starts with who? Hopefully the partner that you find to be able to walk you through this strategy and development of the solution is really asking who you are. Are you a single property owner? Are you a developer? Are you a multi-portfolio operator like Brian's group, right? And so you've got a lot of diversification, and not one solution is going to fit all. And that's going to be key going forward. And you want to make sure that they ask those questions. So then it begins with three little questions, and they're so important to get their own slide here. So really starting with your why. Developing your why is going to be a big thing, right? You know it's out there. You know you might need it. You go into an area of your building and there is no communication, such as Brian mentioned, not being able to make phone calls or receive phone calls where you're in there. Or do you have a single operator tenant that's going to be occupying your building and they're making it a requirement? Are you looking to make your property more attractive? Being able to offer those types of services. You know, wireless is all about mobility, and entering and exiting your building, it's always going to start in a building somewhere. And you want to be able to maintain that fluid connectivity form. And then also operational technology. You know, there's a lot of different initiatives that are going to be coming out here in the future and near state now that are going to be leveraging a lot of wireless technology to be able to communicate, such as indoor air quality sensors, utilization sensors. You can even leverage Wi-Fi for determining what your occupancy rates are in given areas, which is going to make your use cases, and then you move into what? And what is your toolbox, right? That's what you're bringing to the table. There's a lot of different tools that you can use. You don't want to use a screwdriver where a hammer is necessary. And so you evaluate what the different technologies are. And to Brian's point, it's really kind of a blended, layered approach that you would take to implementing the technology to meet the needs of your why. And a lot of it's very acronym heavy. The technical industry, I mean, I came from an IT background. My background is an acronym. So you've got a lot of 4G, 5G, private LTE, the CBRS that's coming out, all the different Wi-Fi flavors. And you'll hear a lot about that today. And then some of the technology drivers in OT, like LoRa. That's a wireless technology that a lot of OT operational technology uses in place of that. So that's why I talk about that first, second, and third order of possibilities, because what can I leverage? What's the maximum I can get out of this investment that I'm looking to make? And one of the biggest things is ownership and control of what goes in your building. I've seen this time and time again, where you have a building that allows people to just put in whatever they need when they come in, which is very attractive to the tenant, but it leaves the owner and the property management company with a headache. You know, you've got a lot of extra cabling that's left all over and things, and just kind of becomes a mess. This gives you control over that. One of the other bigger drivers of this is data analytics. And Brian and Jay both touched on this. And looking at what you can get out of this from a data perspective. What's your fluid flow in an environment that's mixed use retail? Aside from being an amenity where people can leverage their social media to promote where they are and check in and out at different places like Facebook, Yelp, et cetera. All of these things develop into your how. And this is the key component here, right? So you've got your why developed, you've married it to your what and what you're going to put that together with. How is designing the solution. So for instance, if you're a LEED certified building, you want to make sure that that signal from the outside cellular, you have to determine whether or not you're even going to need a distributed antenna system in your building. If you're LEED certified, you probably will, because certain energy sustainability environments that are built up prohibit that signal from being propagated inside. So those are some of the things to actually, you know, you really want to be able to consider. You want to make sure that the carrier approval packages are sent out during the design as well. So that way your design is focused to make sure that the carriers find it very easy to come into your property and plug in, and now you've propagated that signal throughout your facility. The next thing is budgeting, right? How are you going to pay for it? How are you going to make all this stuff work? There's different methodologies to be able to fund with this. You know, you're going to assume that core infrastructure cost, make sure that the common areas are covered, but then take a look at maybe billing back during tenant fit-ups. So if somebody comes into your space and they want to occupy four floors, you've now got a mathematical formula to what how to extend that service into their space and how to build back for it as part of their fit up, which is going to be a key piece. And lastly, it's enveloping all of these specifications that are produced from your what and your why and putting them into an RFP and then managing that process through implementation. You want to make sure that the submittals align and are going to deliver what was originally requested, and then do some commissioning on the installation at the end. You know, write some framework around it so that what you purchased is actually what was delivered and what was received. So if you've got an in-building smart building that you're putting up and you're already just, you know, distributing a network, a wired network, run some extra fiber, because a lot of these in-building systems are going to require additional communication pathways and bandwidth to be able to distribute that throughout your property. So you want to make sure that you're able to look again to that first, second, and third order of possibilities with a homogeneous plan for your entire facility. And with that, your path forward is pretty clear.
Hey, thanks, Mike. I'm really appreciating you breaking down those complexities of an in-building wireless strategy. It's very important to you know, ask those questions. Obviously, you've outlined those very, very well, so I appreciate that. Hey, based on your experience in the industry, and I know that you mentioned a couple of them during your presentation, and what are some of the trends that you see in commercial real estate development concerning wireless?
That's a great question. Let me grab my crystal ball here real quick. The key piece to that is you've heard a lot about IoT. Right. And that's going to be one of the key drivers. It's going to continue to be is the development of technology. We've moved beyond being able to just communicate with each other over mobile. It's really going to be combining that front of house and back of house technology so that it's front facing towards your tenants. They have the ability to communicate across the way. But it's also going to be really driving it from the back of house and operations side of things. I think that's where you're going to see a lot of focus on this. There was a university just recently that was able to harness energy from 5G and leverage that to power a device. That's going to be a game changer for a lot of things. It's going to change the way a lot of infrastructure is planned out in your facility by leveraging wireless a little bit more effectively.
That's an excellent answer. I know that we all like to sit in our bubble and do pie in the sky, assessments of what, you know, the next technology is they're going to come to fruition and people need to be prepared for that. So I really appreciate your presentation today and look forward to you seeing you again for our Q&A at the end.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you, Jay. I appreciate it.
Take care, Mike. Before I introduce our next panelist, here is a video from ExteNet Systems. So that was a wonderful video from ExteNet Systems. Our next panelist, I actually know personally, as we have shared what I consider to be industry trendsetting conversations at several conferences. Jim Hyde is a visionary and thought leader in the communications and digital infrastructure industry. He's the president, CEO, and board director of ExteNet Systems. Jim, thank you in advance for sharing your experience with our audience today, and I will hand it off to you.
Thank you, Jay. Hopefully you can hear me okay. I appreciate the introduction. And I also appreciate you indulging us in the shameless, you know, video plug. So thanks for that. As Jay said, I'm the president and CEO of ExteNet Systems. We're the largest privately owned owner and operator of digital communications infrastructure in the United States. We focus primarily on both outdoor and indoor DAS. And small cell networks, usually neutral host platforms. A lot of what we've talked about here today, do business with, you know, several of the folks that are on this panel here today as well. I'd like to focus in a little bit on sort of where we have been and kind of where we're going. And I think really for panels like this, it's not really, you know, about me, you know, telling you all stuff. It's really more about when we get to the Q&A. So I'll try to keep my comments brief. We do own and operate over 300 neutral host in building networks across the United States. It's interesting when you think about the evolution of in building wireless solutions, right? We started off with the largest of the large sports and entertainment venues, as Jay, you know, well knows the MGM casinos, for example. The AT&T Cowboys Stadium, the large sports venues, right? That was because the carriers really needed coverage, right? And maybe even more important than coverage, capacity, you know, on Sunday afternoon, you know, when 80,000 screaming fans are sucking, you know, the macro network dry, we needed a dedicated system. But boy, has it ever evolved, right? Now we're moving well beyond large sports and entertainment venues for capacity offload solutions and maybe a little bit better coverage solutions. Now it's all about next generation wireless applications. You know, Mike O'Brien talked a lot about it, and Mike also talked a lot about it. When you think about customer driven demand, right, it's evolving. So it's no longer just about the mobile network operators needing better coverage and capacity solutions for their customers that might work and or play in these venues. It's about the tenants of those venues. It's about the venue owners. And we'll talk about that for a couple of minutes here as I flip through a few brief slides. And then, like I say, I'm looking more forward to the Q&A. I'm going to try to see if I can do this without the delay. Are we working? Yeah, here we go. Oh, now I went too far. Yeah, as the CEO, I'm not very good. Can somebody back me up a couple slides? I'm not sure how to get there. One more. Thank you. So as we think about commercial real estate specifically, we've learned a lot over the course of the last year with the pandemic. You know, we saw occupancy rates, you know, tank down to 23%. However, right, people aren't canceling leases yet. I think people are really thinking about what comes next, right? I think there's some serious consideration about downsizing and canceling leases. What does that new normal look like? Rent, you know, rent collections are still running at 90% plus, rates, throughout the pandemic. There's been a lot of impact and a lot of learning, not just for companies like Extenet, right? And when you think about it, at the end of the day, we provide a platform. We're a technology, certainly a technology driven company, but we're a key enabler, right, through our infrastructure and our real estate rights and entitlements for the customer being large mobile network operators, large enterprises, building owners and operators, et cetera, right? So we're a key enabler there. If you start to think about what's most important upon sort of reentry, if you will, from the pandemic, it doesn't you don't have to look too far beyond things like, safety and security, right? More touchless sort of applications that require in-building wireless networks. There's a stat on this slide that shows there's going to be 75 billion IoT devices connected by 2025. That's just around the corner. And by the way, there's other research out there that says it could be significantly higher, right? That's amazing. The whole world's talking about IoT, the Internet of Things, right? Connecting everything to everybody and everything. I have a different definition of IoT, right? My definition of IoT is the infrastructure of things. That's the key enabler. That's what makes it all work. And that's what should be most important to real estate owners and operators to make sure that they've got the right platforms, the right infrastructure in place so they can meet the demands of the MNOs, meet the demands of their tenants, meet the demands of the public. I'm clicking, I promise you. We talk about digital transformation. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on here on this particular slide, but that's really what it's all about. From a real estate owner's perspective, if you're not transforming your property to a digitally enabled property, you're going to fall behind the curve. That's what's going to be, I think, of primary importance as 5G becomes a reality, as your tenants return back to kind of full tenancies and so forth. But we know everybody uses their mobile devices for everything all of the time. 5G is an interesting demand driver, right? What we're finding with our large enterprise customers, it's crazy with my own company. Like, if you don't have great coverage in building, it's no longer about being able to, call your spouse or check on the babysitter, at your lunch break. It's about, I want to be connected to my social media platforms, right? While I'm in my cube at my desk. And if you start to think about the way in which 5G is going to be delivered initially from the carriers in building, it's not low band spectrum that, you can boom from the rooftop across the street. You've got to bring the signal source inside, because we're talking about mid band and high band spectrum for 5G applications. Why? It's a big pipe, right? You need big capacity, low latency to make these 5G applications work. So you've got to bring the signal source inside. You're going to need an in-building wireless, system eventually. Getting out in front of that and future-proofing that, I think, is going to be critical for building owners and operators, everywhere. We talked about advanced capabilities. What are some of those other applications? Not just for your employees, but for the business themselves. Think about wireless manufacturers. Think about logistics, in the warehouse and at the port, right? Think about all of those other safety, security, and efficiency, measures. And at the end of the day, it's really about how much am I going to invest in the infrastructure of my building, and how do I monetize those assets? There's lots of studies out there that shows a 5G or next G enabled a piece of real estate is significantly a value enhanced. We talked about the opportunities already with digital transformation. I got a little ahead of myself, on these slides, but I guess a picture here is worth a thousand words. I'm going to go ahead and move on. Lots of use cases, right? Network coverage, network capacity, and network control are a number of those. Brian talked about it with the malls, right? How much control do we want? Is a CBRS private network the right way for me to, start thinking about this? What's happening is the infrastructure and the technology is evolving, pretty dramatically. You're going to find more and more hybrid public-private networks in lots of venue types over the course of the next several years, because there's going to be a private layer for private applications. There's going to be obviously that public layer that's going to be required, not only for things like E911 and FirstNet, but just to keep your customers happy, as I said a moment ago. So these networks are evolving and evolving very quickly. One of the other important topics that everybody's talking about is the edge, right? So what does that mean? And there's a lot of people running around with, you know, slideware talking about the edge. We've built over 600 edge locations for MNOs and others over the course of the last, you know, dozen years. It's called a hub, right? But the hub is evolving, right? Software is defining the way in which we you know, drive these networks from an MNO perspective. But the edge is a really interesting concept, and it adds value to the in-building infrastructure that many of the folks that are listening in today are thinking about it. Because to me, right, it's not about demand to the edge, right? Certainly, there's demand being driven further out at the edge, but it's about bringing the edge to the demand. In other words, the customer is going to drive that. So if you're a mall, for example, there's an opportunity, there may even be a need and a demand to have an edge data center, if you will, on property. Same thing for commercial real estate owners. And the other thing about that is, if you get the infrastructure in place, right, you can actually monetize your real estate by providing, you know, edge services to paying customers, right? And those are the types of things that ExteNet can help you all figure out. Let me try to click through here. I think that was it for me. Anyway, thanks very much for the time. I appreciate, you know, the opportunity, and look forward to Q&A.
Jim, as always, thank you. I appreciate our conversations, and specifically your vast knowledge of our industry. It's always a pleasure to hear what you have to say. I would like to know your thoughts before we move on to our next presenter on where we stand in today's challenging times, right? So how is important, in building wireless in today's environment with real estate owners, you know, when occupancy is down and reentry is a focus?
Yeah, no, I briefly touched on that. I can go just a little bit deeper there. I think you got to think about it a couple of different ways. One is what's going to be most important to your tenants upon, you know, reentry, and things like wireless applications, you know, touch-free entry, a security tracking and monitoring, and so forth as they reenter these buildings. I think you're going to find more and more applications, day-to-day applications that make enterprises work, run on wirelessly connected networks off of personal devices, so they don't need to be dealing with, you know, other equipment, you know, and so on and so forth. We're hearing that every day already. So wireless infrastructure is going to be key to that. And the question, you know, and Mike, you just think about it the right way. You've got to get some real intelligence around not only what you need today, but what's around that next corner. How do I future-proof this? And what's nice about being sort of a shared infrastructure and real estate provider, what I really enjoy about what we do is, we're kind of, you know, we're customer driven, right? We're technology enabled, but we're also somewhat technology agnostic at the end of the day, right? If you get the right infrastructure in place and you future proof that infrastructure, right, it's good for a really long time.
Yeah, excellent answer, and you're absolutely correct. Look, you mentioned it before in your presentation. Those touchless use cases are going to require that infrastructure, and you guys are indeed the enablers of that. So thank you again. We'll see you at the end for Q&A. Thanks, Jim.
My pleasure, Jay. Thanks as always. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And now a video from Spot On Networks. That was excellent. Our next panelist is Dick Sherwin. He is the Chief Executive Officer for Spot On Networks and has been involved in the wireless communications industry for the past 30 years. He founded Spot On Networks as which is a provider of telecommunications. They really focus on multifamily residential and multi-tenant commercial buildings. So a very, very important niche in our industry. Dick, thank you for joining us. I'm going to hand it over to you now.
Hey, thank you very much, and thanks for having me. I appreciate the time. I'm not saying anything that you already don't know. The pandemic has created changes in space usage that very few of us could have envisioned 13 to 14 months ago. Our clients, owners of multi-tenant commercial buildings and multifamily residential buildings, have had to basically rethink how spaces will be used at the present time, in the next year, in the next 5 years. As Mike McMahon indicated a little while ago, the need to work remotely, the changing needs of employers for space, the use of smartphones for both personal and business purposes, including things like touchless applications that Jim Hyde just mentioned, has caused in-building wireless connectivity to be as important as clean air, clean water, and electricity. The exponential increase in data transmission to the cloud, to servers, and data exchange with others requires a rethink of in-building wireless capacity. Couple all of that with the increasing use of smart devices to operate a building, including, as Jim pointed out, the infrastructure of things devices like air monitoring sensors, thermostats, and the like. And it appears to us that in-building wireless connectivity and future-proof a building for many years to come. As Mike mentioned earlier, it is important to understand the requirements of in-building wireless connectivity and what objectives the building owner is aiming to accomplish. Autonomous, owner-controlled wireless services offers amenities to tenant employees, offers control of building operating systems, offers data analytics of building operations, offers touchless capability, and of course, voice and text services in buildings with not so good cell reception. What we've done is put together a comparison of two of the services that we believe will become prevalent inside of buildings as time goes on. Those two are Wi-Fi 6 and CBRS. And CBRS takes two forms. It can be an autonomous system, self-controlled, inside the building, and it can be a neutral host function where there's roaming between the outside cell carriers and the inside CBRS system. As Brian Schwartz mentioned earlier, determining the objectives like monetization, analytics, speed, and capacity of connectivity will all play a role in selecting the appropriate in-building wireless service. I thought I'd just outline a few high points because you'll get a copy of this chart in the presentation. Frequency availability will determine speed of transmission and capacity. By capacity, we mean the number of simultaneous devices capable of being served within the building. Wi-Fi, although Wi-Fi uses unlicensed frequency, whereas CBRS uses both licensed and unlicensed frequency, Wi-Fi offers a huge amount of spectrum, especially with the addition of Wi-Fi 6E, which adds 1 gigahertz of spectrum in the 6 gigahertz band. If you look at the chart, you'll see that the frequency range for Wi-Fi 6 and 6E is about 1.6 gigahertz of spectrum, and CBRS is about 150 megahertz of spectrum. And what that means is that there can be more channels active, larger channels, thus increasing the speed capability and the capacity. CBRS offers extremely low latency. It can be used for mission critical applications because of this low latency and high availability. And of course, CBRS will eventually migrate from 4G LTE to 5G. And so it becomes a really good operating system for those mission critical applications. When providing connectivity for the purposes of data and voice transmission, all previous Wi-Fi enabled devices will be supported by Wi-Fi 6 in the earlier frequencies, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, as well as in the new frequency range, 6 gigahertz. CBRS will only support phones with 3.5 gigahertz spectrum, which could be a problem with tenant employees. Another thing to really look at is complementary technologies. Open roaming, which was developed by the Wireless Broadband Alliance and which as of today has all of its standards set and ready to go, will be available before the end of the year. What open roaming does is it provides carrier authorized cell phone users roaming capability on approved Wi-Fi networks without any special connection or credential checking. In addition, another technology, this what I mentioned earlier, neutral host CBRS, is becoming available right now. It will provide devices with automatic roaming from outside the building on a carrier's network to inside the building on the autonomous CBRS network. One other point from a technology standpoint is there are now certain Wi-Fi access points that support CBRS using connectivity to neighboring devices. We believe that owners and developers of buildings should set objectives, secure some assistance from knowledgeable entities. I think Mike mentioned a lot of this. And understand the combined owner-developer requirements and merge them with the technologies so that it forms a strategic approach. Thanks for listening. Oop, I went too far. Okay.
You're good. Thank you. Thank you, Dick. Wonderful information on Wi-Fi 6 and CBRS. I'm sure we have webinar attendees who are curious, and I'm not sure if you really went into detail on this, but does it make sense to implement both CBRS and Wi-Fi 6 in a building?
So it's interesting. Brian really laid this out in his quote unquote layer approach. He had multiple services being offered in his facilities because he wanted to address certain needs, and each one of those needs can be served by a different service. So the answer, I think, is yes. There's a good reason to have a layered approach. I think it depends on the building. It depends on the demographic, who's in the building. It depends on the structure of the building and the location of the building.
Yeah, perfect. I would agree wholeheartedly to what you just stated. It is absolutely based on use cases. The enterprise needs to look at that and really determine which wireless network best suits those business use cases. So thank you again, Dick. I appreciate it. We'll touch base again in the Q&A. For those of you that are attending, we're getting several questions in the Q&A chat session, so appreciate that. Keep them coming. We're going to watch a short video from Nextivity prior to introducing our final speaker today.
Modern building materials, while improving energy efficiency, will block or inhibit cellular service from the outside network. Cellular coverage is an increasingly critical part of any business operation and daily life. In fact, cellular coverage can be considered a safety or even regulatory requirement, depending on the region. Building owners need a flexible, high-quality solution. Installers and value-added resellers need a product that can serve the majority of building types and not take months to deploy. CellFi Quattro 4000 solves that problem. CellFi Quattro 4000 is based on the award-winning carrier-grade technology with the IntelliBoost chipset at the core and the CellFi Wave remote management platform. Learn why operators, building owners, and integrators choose CellFi to get the best cellular coverage possible. For more information, go to cellfi.com/Quadra.
Our final speaker today on today's webinar is Mihail Lader. He's the Chief Technical Officer of Nextivity. And over the past 25 years, Mihail has been intimately involved in the growth and rollout of wireless technologies worldwide. Mihail, very excited to hear what you have for our audience today. I'm going to hand it over to you, and we look forward to what you're presenting.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate the time. And I want to echo Jim. Thanks for allowing us to make a shameless plug in the video there for some of our products. It was interesting to think about the topic in terms of, you know, what you should be thinking about when you're planning the wireless coverage inside of your building, especially coming from a equipment manufacturer point of view. And when we think about, and I thought what I would do today is talk a little bit about how we think about a building and how we think about the products that we need to make for the building. And I think it ties in well with what everyone else have said, right? We use a little bit different words. For us, we always try to remember that's what is at the center of what we're trying to do is our people. All of the systems that we're going to put into the building, whether it's your customer, whether it's an employee, etc., people are at the center of what we're trying to achieve here. And when we think about the products that we need to do, and we think about the services and what we need to put inside of the building, there are really three things that we think about from our point of view. So the first one is safety, right? We want people to feel safe inside of a building. And what does safe mean, right? We want the building to be healthy. We want the building to be ready to handle an incident if an incident happens. So everything around the general, you know, safety of the building. No one can be productive. No one can be happy inside of a building if they don't firstly feel safe in the building. And I think, you know, obviously with COVID now, safety has taken on even a different meaning. Secondly, we want the people in the building to be productive. And in order to be productive, there's a few things that we think are important. So the first one that we think about is obviously the corporate network, right? Someone needs to be in the building. You know, we have people coming in and out of buildings much more right now compared to what they used to in the past, sharing spaces, etc. So your ability to connect to your corporate network, mostly wirelessly today, is of course extremely important. But then we also think that aspects like automation is becoming more and more important, and I'll give some examples of that later. And then finally, we obviously want people to be happy in the building. I think someone mentioned earlier, you know, personal connectivity matters. When someone is in the building, right, and you know, their personal cell phone is not working, that creates an annoyance, and that's something that we don't really want to happen. So when we think about our products and about what's important around the products, we think in these sort of three different areas. And I think that's important for the building in general, right? Because we obviously want to support all of the wireless aspects that you have inside of the building. So when we think about safe buildings, we think safe buildings are firstly healthy buildings. And I think a few people mentioned, you know, smart buildings and sensors inside of buildings. And I think that's becoming more and more important as new technologies become available, and also as new requirements become available. You know, things like air quality, the temperature, the lighting, all of the things that really make the person productive inside the building and make the person feel safe inside the building, we need to think about these and take these into account. And I think this is where some of the more IoT style technologies like Bluetooth and Zigbee and Z-Wave and so on, these are critical building blocks. And you know, although you can make these interoperate to some extent, I think there's some value in, for example, deciding that my sensor network is going to be a large, you know, Zigbee mesh network, right? And we can plan for that. Or it's going to be a Bluetooth low energy network, and we can plan for that. Secondly, we want buildings to be incident ready. And what does that mean? So firstly, there has to be excellent communications, right? I think we're seeing a big push for first responder communications and to ensure that that first responders have the access to communication that they need, which means your building may require an emergency radio communication enhancement system. We're seeing a big push in terms of the enforcement of code like NFPA 1221 and NFPA 1225, for example, IFC 510 in buildings. And this has pushed the importance of first responder radio communications within inside of the building. And I said, we see this as a growing trend across the country. But we also need excellent communication for people inside the building, right? If there's an emergency, someone must be able to dial 911. And the reverse is also true. If there is an incident, we want people to be reachable so that they can be notified of the incident and they know what it is that they need to do. And of course, one of the main ways to do that is through SMS, for example, to be able to do mass notifications of people inside of your building. And that requires good commercial cellular coverage. We think that you can go further than this, though, as well, right? If you take some of these technologies and some of the smart building aspects and you merge them, we believe that in-building wider sensor networks can play a key role in providing first responders with more situational awareness. And I think this is important for the building owner, right? The better job the first responders can do when they have to react to an incident, the more you protect, life and the assets, right? And limit damage to a greater extent. So we definitely see the wireless networks inside the building, not just being able to focus on what's happening inside the building, but to get that information and to make it available out, even outside the building, to people such as first responders. So we believe that all productive buildings will have a few things in common, right? They'll have great corporate wireless networks. I'm 100% sure everyone has agreed, right, that Wi-Fi will be there. For me, it's more almost like what is it that we wrap around the Wi-Fi, right, to provide that extra capabilities that we need. I think Dick did a great job in, talking about Wi-Fi 6. There's so much spectrum available. There's so much bandwidth available. It far outstrips almost anything else that you can put inside of a building. But it does come with some drawbacks and some features for which it just never was designed for. And we think that this is where things like private LTE networks or private 5G networks will come in and will become more and more important. Because it provides the ability to do different services. And especially with the ability to be mobile and to do handoffs and things like that. If you have a large site and you have people moving across the site, a private mobile network will provide a much greater user experience than what you can probably get with a Wi-Fi network today. And so that opens up the options for you to do lots of automation, real-time asset tracking, process automation, etc. As an example, narrowband IoT on the LTE networks, I think, are becoming so important. And what's good about it is that it's got all the benefits of the cellular network, including mobility, low power, low cost, etc. And being able to take that and to merge that on the automation side, we worked with a customer that has a high-tech bicycle manufacturing plant in Europe. And their whole plant is enabled with narrowband IoT to be able to track literally all the assets, the people, the manufacturing process, really what we envision with industry 4.0 type of applications. And we see especially private networks as well as commercial narrowband IoT playing a big role in this move towards automation. But of course, the coverage needs to be there to be able to support that. And then, happy buildings makes people feel nice and warm and they want to come to work and they want to be there. And I think there's, even though we will see, I think, a continued growth in people working remotely and having, maybe some days in the office and some days not in the office, having people together, I think there's just an energy that gets established when we have that. And we can only have that when people like being in the buildings, right? I want to do a lunchtime video call with the kids, right? Share stories on social media, etc. So making sure that the folks that are inside the building have great access to their communication through things like the commercial cellular network, I think, is a key part of making a happy building experience. So for us, when we think about in-building wireless and the things I think that you need to think about when you're planning your strategy, right? You've got to think about like all the things that we have on the slide here. You've got to think about the commercial cellular network. You have to understand how you can use private LTE and 5G networks to enhance your business. You've got to think about the sensor networks as well. How am I going to get all the information inside of my building? And you have to think public safety as well. So Jay, that was my slides, and be happy to answer some questions.
Mihail, thank you so much. I look back at that happy experience slide that you just put up, and I reflect back to my days at MGM, and I always could tell what type of day it was going to be by based on, you know, the employees' moods and whether or not they were able to use their cell phone, because the either the Wi-Fi or the cellular signal was up and running and available to them or not. So you're absolutely spot on with that. It is it definitely has an impact to the morale of the employees and the user experience itself. So thank you so much. I appreciate that. You touched a little bit on private LTE. I'm curious of your opinion. When do you think private LTE networks will really take off?
So I think it's a great question, and I think we'll see it in phases. I think that like many new technologies and so on, right? I think the technology is there now, but I think all the business models are still somewhat in flux, and there are a few things that need to be figured out, right? So for example, dual SIM phones are not very popular in the US. I'm not even sure that you can easily buy one. So if I'm going to be on my private LTE network in the building, but I also need to carry my phone with my commercial SIM inside, right? I think there's like little few things like that are still a little bit difficult to figure out exactly how it's going to play out. But as I said, I do think the technology is there. I think we'll see phase one. We're seeing phase one right now, where private LTE networks are being used on the more of the IoT side, making people productive, filling in the holes that we have with Wi-Fi, especially from a mobility point of view. So I think we'll see that ramp. And then, my opinion is we'll see a little bit of a plateau, and then I think some of the business things will be sorted out. And I think we'll see the next jump, right, where people will start to use the CBRS or private LTE networks, not necessarily on CBRS, for communication, right? And then we'll see the final stage after that, where it's really just an integral part of the overall network. So I think right now we'll see something, we are seeing some things happening. I think, probably, 2-3 years before we get to that next plateau.
Yeah, wonderful answer. Thank you so much for sharing that perspective. At this moment in time, I'd like to thank all of our panelists today for their wonderful presentations and the information that they've shared. I'm going to ask them to come on screen again. We're going to move into our Q&A with our panel. A reminder to the audience, you can submit questions. We have several questions already in the chat. I do have one that first came up, and I think it's a very, very interesting question. I'm going to direct this towards Brian. Obviously, being on the enterprise, I think this is very, very appropriate for you. Brian, the question came in from the audience. It says, where do you see the privacy line in tracking clients and their information as they visit your venues? And I think the question may mean, where is that line in the sand, right?
Yeah, and this is something that we deal with all the time, and we're talking about all the time. And that's one of the reasons why in my presentation, we can do those analytics. We have opted away from them, and mostly because of all the privacy concerns with the CCPA and all the laws coming out about privacy and where what needs to be done and what kind of risk do we have trying to it's the risk reward a little bit, right? So there's some risk with invading on someone's privacy and all the things you have to do to comply with that. And then there's the reward of all the data you get from it. And where do you fall in that range? Is it worth it or not? So we take all the privacy stuff very seriously. We have a whole privacy office, which evaluates all our initiatives before we go forward with them to ensure that we can comply with all the privacy regulations. So sometimes we will say no. And in a lot of cases with tracking people, we have opted out of that in all cases, I think. We have opted out of that. We have, like I said, started dipping our toe in getting people's email addresses, which is still, there's still a lot of privacy around it. And we give them the ability to opt out and do all the stuff that we're required to do by law. So we've started dipping our toe in there. It's a lot less invasive than tracking someone around the mall, but it is that first step and just seeing how people react to it and if it helps. But we overall take it very seriously, and that's why we've kind of really slowed down. And I mean, there's so much you can do with Wi-Fi and CBRS coming down the pipe. You got to make sure you have all your ducks in order before you start doing anything that pushes that privacy line.
Excellent. Well said. Well said. Hey, Mike, this this one came specific to you. It says, could you explain again the overlap between connectivity and LEED certification? Also, there's a follow-up to this. How do you see most facilities adding continuous monitoring of air quality sensors in buildings, in-suite, in-duct, outdoor, et cetera?
Sure. So connectivity and LEED, the ideas behind energy management and sustainability, right, and being able to qualify for LEED certification, what we're seeing is more of a trend in that if you're looking to have in-building cellular and you put up energy sustainable type glazing, right, they're going to have a certain film coating on it to keep heat out, right, and make it more energy efficient. That's going to block some of the cellular signal coming in. So if you've got a large glass building as part of your property, you're going to be running into an issue where you're not going to get outside signals inside of your building, and that's where distributed antenna systems come in. And part of the design work behind that is to make sure that if you're pursuing that type of certification or you already have it, that you're taking that into consideration as part of your design methodology. We're also starting to see a shift in LEED certification as part of the design, but there needs to be a method of sustainability, right? They're looking to have to make sure that your LEED certification, once you're certified, maybe there's a program approach where you're maintaining that LEED certification, which is by, you know, collecting and producing data, analyzing that data, and then producing a measurable result, which leads into the second question there about continuous monitoring and indoor air quality sensing. What we're starting to see a lot of, indoor air quality sensing has been around for a really long time. Obviously, more popular in places that have high pollution rates in other countries. But, you know, here in the U.S., we're starting to see that come about because this is, you know, our time right now is very disruptive. And indoor air quality sensing combined with, you know, space utilization combined with your HVAC system, if you have some type of control and you're able to tie all those together, those sensors can produce the data that drives your HVAC system to pump more air into the building or change, you know, the level of flow and the air rate that's in a building to be able to accommodate the people that are in the building, right, in those particular uses.
Excellent, excellent. I'm gonna, this question wasn't directed towards anyone, but I'm gonna go ahead and direct this towards Dick. Obviously with his implementation experience, I'm sure he has firm knowledge of this. The question is, from a design and engineering perspective, will local jurisdictions require permitting services for any of these in-building solutions?
Okay, Jay, thanks. It's been our experience that permitting is definitely required for emergency responder radio communications enhancement systems. There's a whole process that we have to go through. We have general radio operator licensed engineers who specialize in radio communications enhancement systems for first responders. We have seen permitting requirements, and we've seen a whole test process that we have to go through. When we install a system, the authority having jurisdiction, generally the fire marshal or some member of the municipality, has the right to demand test results and has the right to make changes. And so we're very careful about that. And we actually consult with the authority having jurisdiction just about every step of the way. On Wi-Fi services, it has not been our experience that permitting is required. Because it's low voltage Cat 5 and low power radio frequency unlicensed inside the building, we have seen no requirements for permitting other than the normal building code permitting for electricians.
Excellent. Thank you, Dick. You know, obviously, if anybody else wants to add to that, I think Dick covered it pretty well. I think that we all have experienced this in the past where, you know, the local municipalities, you know, obviously have different standards and codes. We just need to make note and be mindful. And this is part of that comprehensive strategy and doing your due diligence that we need to make sure that we address those as we continue to evolve that strategy. I do want to go back to Jim's presentation. I think it's very, very important, this message, or at least his answer relating to this question is important for real estate developers to understand, because it is, the model has been around for a long time, and it's very, very, it's been a leading model in the industry, and we feel that it's a very important message. So, Jim, as a neutral host operator, how do you prioritize the needs of all the entities? This is a three-way agreement between carriers and the property owners themselves, and then of course extended systems. How do you prioritize those needs?
Look, and I think there's a fourth. Thanks. I think there's a fourth one as well, which are the tenants, right? So for us, we're we used to say we're sort of triangulating around what ExteNet does, what the mobile network operators need and what the building owners need. But now those the tenants themselves also are demand drivers. So what we really do is we kind of put them all in the box, right? For us, we try to partner in such a way where we can help building owners understand what's most important. Not only we can learn what's most important to them, what the carriers need, how the model's evolving, and how they need to be thinking about things. So for example, right, what makes neutral host work, right, is it's a shared platform, right? And in the past, our indoor DAS systems would be we'd structure it where it was shared between the three mobile network operators. Well, that's quickly evolving. So we can easily now design and deploy networks that have public and private together layer, right? We can carve off capacity for building owner applications. We can do partial coverage via small cell for tenants on floors, 10 through 20 that have different needs, that have different coverage and capacity needs and application needs than the rest of the building, right? And then same thing for the MNOs. Think about it. The MNOs, in the past, look, I just need to have better coverage inside that building. Now I've got a large enterprise customer that's on floors 10 to 20, right? That I want to make sure I have gold plated 5G service for that part of the building, but I don't necessarily need gold plated service for the rest of the building. So it's really working with each of those kind of key core constituents there to design the infrastructure and the network that's going to serve all of those needs.
Thank you, Jim. Excellent insightfulness. I know that a lot of people get confused on that, but well stated, and obviously you guys are a leader in that neutral host environment. So appreciate your time today. Another question here for Mihail, and I want to kind of go back to your presentation as well. I think it's important as you started talking about the different building categories, a happy building or a smart building. When I briefly asked you the question about when will private LTE really take off, but I want to expand upon that a little bit more. Do you see private LTE being able to support all of those facets of a building, in the sense of communications that we've had in the past that were traditional analog, say two-way radios and other technologies? Can we support all of these on a private LTE network?
It's a great question, and I think that 5 years from now, my opinion is that we will see the bulk of general communications in the building being able to be supported by private LTE. It doesn't mean it's going to, because I think that, for example, if I think about a large, an MGM resort, right? All the staff at the resort that have to communicate with each other using two-way radio today, right? That's a big investment, right? So I think it'll take a long time for that investment to basically be worked out. But I do believe that private LTE will have everything that is needed to really take over pretty much all of the private communications inside of the building. You can host a complete private LTE network locally on your site. You can put some of it in the cloud. You can have it multi-sited. And very importantly, I think that there's a number of like push to talk style applications that are available today. And those I think have matured so much over the last, 5 years, especially as they are being used by first responders as well, right? And those features are filtering down into for private use that, I can definitely see a situation where all of the normal communications between people that work inside of a building, right, that used to be done with two-way radios can be done by, a smart device. And the great thing about it, right, is it can just be your normal Samsung or Apple or whatever, phone it is that you like and that you want to use. You can use that to do the voice communication, but more importantly, right, you've got all this other data there. I mean, you have apps that, help you to, see what's going on in the buildings, communicate with, your teammates, right? All of that information is available. So, I definitely see that happening, right? And I think that this private LTE, private 5G networks have all of the building blocks in place to be able to do that. And I think it has it in place, not just because there's a, like a CBRS spectrum. It's the whole ecosystem, I think, is matured. Like I said, you need push to talk, you need video cameras, right? You need all of these things to be able to really, supplant what we've had in the past. But I think we're there. I think we're ready to go to take that step.
Outstanding. Thank you for sharing that. I do have one question that popped up into the chat session, and we have time for this last question. So, Brian, I'm going to direct this towards you, but I think that it's important for all of our panelists to be able to chime in afterwards to give their perspective. But I'm going to read this question. If it doesn't make if it's not clear, we'll see if we can get the person that submitted this question to clarify. But how do you see the responsibilities of building owner operator share with the tenant for occupants' benefit? I think what they're trying to ask here is, what responsibilities are it, Brian, of you, the owner, and the operator of those retail centers for your tenants? And some of it would probably be in line with the, the T's and C's of that tenant agreement. But when it's specific to wireless, do you guys have those types of conditions?
A little bit. We have a little bit of that. So that's an interesting question, because from our perspective, in a lot of ways, we stop at the lease line, right? So we cover the common area and they cover their tenant space and they lease that space and that's theirs to do with as they please. But when it comes to wireless, that line is not as easily drawn as a, a physical line in the sand, right? Wireless can bleed over into a common area and vice versa. So what we've been doing is making sure there's lease language to protect both parties and other parties. So for example, a tenant can't bleed out into the common area with their Wi-Fi signal or any kind of wireless signal that may interfere with other tenants or our common area Wi-Fi. So we're trying to make sure that everyone works on different, works on different channels and doesn't bleed and does that. So we're kind of, I think, in some respects, the mediator or the one that can make sure that no tenant is infringing on each other and no tenant's infringing on us. And we're not infringing on the tenant. So I think that's part of our responsibility and part of the tenant's responsibility as well. And that way, as the occupants or the shoppers walk through a center, they're not seeing the impact of conflicting signals and things like that. And that can, that can go on and on, but that's kind of my take on that. I'd be curious if any of you have any thoughts on that. No?
Yeah.
So if I can make one comment on that, I think it depends on the, on the application. I think, Brian said it well, right? There's, they're responsible for a certain level. I think Dick mentioned the layers. If you talk about layers, this is, I think, where the layers are, right? The occupant has some unique requirement, and I think he takes care of his unique requirements. And the, the building owner has a specific requirement, takes care of that requirement, like making sure that the building is safe. For me, that would be like a building owner requirement, right? Making sure that my business can be automated. That's the tenant's requirement. And I think the most important thing is to make sure that when you do all of these things, to make sure that they all work together. And I think that's one of the good things where we are from a technology point of view today it's getting so much easier to make things work together today than what it was, you know, some time ago.
And I just kind of, you know, jump in there as well. You know, I kind of think about these things from, you know, we all talk about, you know, broadband connectivity. Now, wireless broadband connectivity indoors is sort of the fourth utility. I'm a big, you know, sort of believer in that, but it evolves from there. Utility kind of assumes lights on, right? So like, what are those core requirements, just baseline core requirements that you would consider just lights on type stuff? And then from a commercial real estate owner's perspective, we're having some really interesting and productive discussions about how we can help them think about technology and connectivity differently as it relates to their tenants and the services that they provide, right? So like, think technology packages, right? You know, sort of silver, gold, and platinum, depending on what, you know, those use cases are, what those capacity needs might be, et cetera. So there's some really, you know, kind of creative ways you can approach this with your, you know, with your customers, and then obviously with your suppliers as well, depending on the needs of the building owners and the tenants themselves.
Go ahead, Dick.
Jay, just to answer Brian's point, years and years and years ago, the Federal Communications Commission, recognizing the problem with wireless frequency arrangements in unlicensed bands, established a coordination function so that there was an entity that would coordinate frequency usage where two users of unlicensed bands wound up being in conflict. As a result, when we started this business some years ago, we decided to take on that responsibility of coordinating the radio frequency. And so in a typical commercial environment or a residential environment, we take on that obligation of ensuring that channels are coordinated properly and that interference is reduced or non-existent. And I think that's one of the things that we do for our clients as a managed service provider.
And if I could jump back in, Jay, for a second, like what Dick said, that's something that's like very interesting to us. We're a real estate company, so having to manage and make sure everyone is not conflicting with each other, we should be looking to someone like Spot On and Dick to help us understand or have them manage that and make sure everyone's kind of playing by the rules, because when it comes to us, the landlord, it gets a little complicated and there's a lot to do there. And I mean, Dick, tell me if I'm off base on that.
Brian, I'm waiting for the call.
Okay.
Yeah, Brian, I think you make a very, very good point. And I think we're seeing trends in the industry today where, you know, the property owners are looking to those companies. You know, it's a network as a service. And Jim made a really great point as well, as look, we're trying to help the enterprise monetize these types of services, especially with private LTE coming out and being able to slice and, you know, those network resources accordingly to the tenants of public venues and or commercial buildings. I think that is an important message for our audience to see. In closing, obviously, I'd like to thank all of our panelists today. Certainly great conversation around the technologies, the strategies, the influences of those strategies in developing a comprehensive approach towards, you know, in-building wireless and what your venue may need. A lot of resources out there. Do your due diligence, and your end product will create that, once again, that experience that all users are looking for. So with that, thank you so much. I'm going to turn it over to Nancy for some final comments.
Thank you, Jay, and thanks to all of our panelists. Great, great session today. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Before we sign off, I'd like to take a minute to mention a few events we have coming up next week. First, tune in for our weekly news show, RealCom Live, tomorrow, where we'll be exploring JBG Smith's National Landing, a project poised to be one of the most innovative digital districts in the world. You'll hear about their acquisition of 7 blocks of CBRS spectrum through a national auction that is part of a broader initiative to establish National Landing as one of the nation's first 5G cities. So that seemed rather right in line with some of our discussions today. Then next Thursday, we'll begin our Smart Buildings Bootcamp series with part one, defining a smart buildings. You can sign up on our website or use the link I'm about to post in the chat window on the right. Please note, we'll be starting a little late in the day for that webinar. That's it for today. Thanks again to all of you, to our audience for joining us. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.